What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of She, Her, They with Kittens. I'm obviously your host, Kittens, and if you're new here, welcome. I'm so happy to have you. This is a great time to start. If you've been around for a minute, then shout out to you because it's officially been 1 month since our first episode premiered, and I'm just excited. So, you know, we're gonna celebrate it a little bit, at least on the inside. So this week I have Donna Missel on, who is not only one of the most refreshing artists I've heard in a long time sonically, but her story and energy are just as refreshing. So I actually met Donna at a show we were both performing at years ago and heard her voice before I saw her. Like literally, I was just backstage, heard this person singing so powerfully and was just like, what? Who is that? And had to run out just to like see what was going on. I hadn't heard of her before that and was just absolutely blown away. In this episode, we talk about the evolution of language and how the expansion of terminology has helped people explain and explore their identities better, how homeschooling as a child in an open, supportive family gave her the freedom to explore her identity without any social pressures, and cats, because honestly, why would I pass up on a chance to talk to somebody who actually likes them or has one? Let's get into it. Just a reminder that since language around identity is very nuanced and ever-evolving, some terms here may become outdated. This is meant to be a safe and inclusive space, so I'm going to do my best to constantly learn and stay on top of changes.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to see a person.
Oh, I know. I feel like I don't think I've seen you since I met you.
No, I literally think we haven't seen each other since then. Something wrong with that. It's not good. It's also, though, such a product of, like, I don't know, because I feel like I know what you're up to. I, like, keep up with you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like I definitely know you better than when we met.
Yeah.
But just know, in person, maybe we were preparing for this.
This was the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you still have that cat? You had a really cute cat.
Oh, hell yeah. We have four cats in this house right now.
Oh my God, the dream.
Okay, so I had my cat when I moved in. Mm-hmm. His name is Frank, the really fluffy one you're talking about. Okay. Had him when we moved in. And then, so we're moving in, right? We're in the process of moving in. We moved in over like the course of a couple weeks. So we're moving my sister out of her apartment.
Yeah.
To move into this house. And it's the last day that we're there. But all the doors open and we're airing the apartment out. We're all sitting in her empty room that we had just moved all the furniture out of. And we say, like, oh, I wonder if Frank is going to be, like, lonely. Maybe we should get him, like, a friend. Maybe we should get a kitten. And we hear, I shit you not. Like, this is, I'm not bullshitting you. We hear a kitten meow.
Oh, my God.
We're like, what? And we just all peek our head around the corner down the hallway, and a kitten had run into my sister's apartment right in that moment. We've been taking care of him ever since. His name is Chicken. Chicken. My other sister's boyfriend for Valentine's Day got her a kitten, so that was our third cat. And then recently, my sister's girlfriend lives in Hollywood, so they were staying over there. And they were coming on their way, like, back over here to Pasadena, and they found a kitten in a box in Hollywood and brought it home.
Oh my
God. We had every intention of finding it a home, but this kitten is like fucking the cutest kitten. It's not going to happen. So yeah, we have four cats here.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's aggressive.
Yeah. I have three, and I'm like, I overextended myself with the third. I'm glad I have them, but like three is a lot, so I can only imagine four. Shout out to your cat army.
With all of their personalities, and they're all just like yelling all the time. And it's the sweetest thing when you see them hanging out. I'm sure your cats like have really sweet relationships with each other.
Yeah.
That's a huge spark joy.
Yeah. Like when they're in a giant cuddle puddle together, I just lose it. I'm like, I want to just slam you all.
My camera roll is just my kittens.
Yep.
Cuddling each other.
Well, let's jump into the fun little questioning portion here, I guess. Sure. Before we do that, will you introduce yourself real quick and also how you identify, pronouns, sexuality, whatever?
Sure. Yeah, of course. I'm Donna Missel. I'm a musician, a recording artist. I have always just identified on the queer spectrum and never really set a boundary for myself as to what that is. I've been publicized as being bisexual. I would probably personally categorize myself, if I had to, as pansexual. And my pronouns are she, her.
Fab. We love that. It's so interesting. I feel like I don't know anyone who identifies as bisexual anymore.
It's like not really, I don't want to be reductive and say that it's not a thing. It's absolutely a thing.
Totally. But I feel like people moved more towards like pansexual just kind of resonates with so many more people who used to identify as bisexual. It's really interesting how there's been that shift.
I think it's the language that we're being provided. You know, I think that there's sometimes like a catch-22 to the language involved in like identifying yourself. And the language of the queer community can be this like great way to educate people who are not queer, or which, by the way, I'd probably argue that
literally everyone
is queer.
Yeah.
but I think also the language can feel reductive or inaccurate. Mm-hmm. I know that for me, like, whenever I see it published somewhere that, you know, like bisexual singer or, you know, Donna Missel bisexual, like I get a little cringy about it because I have had relationships with non-binary people. Mm-hmm. And so I know that my limitations are not man, woman.
Yeah.
You know, so bisexuality, I think, is because of this new term being available, this like pansexuality becoming more, I mean, the term has just become more present. You're hearing it more. We understand what that means and what that is. So it's actually been nice to see that there's more fluidity than there has been in the past with identifiers. But yeah, I don't know many bisexual people, I think probably for that reason.
Yeah, I think it's really like, it's really beautiful that there's just this freedom to be, like, just to be human and like what you like and be who you are. And I'm so curious to see how things go over the next few generations. Like, are people going to identify as anything anymore? Like, I feel like eventually we're just going to move away from terms and labels and all that stuff. I don't know.
I think that would be so good for us.
And yeah,
I'd love to see that happen, to not have to really, it almost feels like it becomes something to answer to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what I believe sexuality is about.
Mm-hmm.
Any sexuality. Yeah. So I think it would be beautiful if there just wasn't any need for that.
Yeah. I think we'll get there someday. We'll see
though. I think so too.
Do you feel like you felt a difference in your creative process after coming out at all, or?
No, I never really had like a proper coming out.
Even just coming to terms with it yourself.
Sure. You know, for literally as long as I remember experiencing sexuality, any kind of sexuality, it's an included boys and girls and men and women and like it. I don't remember a time when that wasn't present in my mind. I didn't have like a moment in my teenhood or anything, or my young adulthood, where I recognized, oh my God, I think I'm attracted to this person, and it's not a dude. So I think that means like that never was a part of my process as a person.
Wow.
My first kiss was with my little neighbor girl, Erica. Mm-hmm. So like, I never had a coming out to myself even. When it started being questioned from others, I think was when it was like, oh yeah, I mean, if if bisexuality or queer identifying, like if that means what I've already been doing my whole life, then I guess then yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so my creative process, I've been a creative since I was a kid, and been making music for a really long time, and I've always just written about my experience, and my experience in my life has always included both genders. So nothing's changed really. I feel very, very lucky. I feel really privileged that my experience hasn't needed to include that. Yeah. I think that can be traumatizing and really difficult and can feel really limiting. And I'm really lucky. I never had that experience. I think it has a lot to do with my presentation. Mm-hmm. I think I present so hetero passing, like you just wouldn't even question it. And I don't know what it's like to have to rectify the way that I look, making people question who I'm into.
Interesting. Wow. I feel like everyone I know has had some like major point of like, oh my God, like light bulb moment or like putting the pieces together. So it's really interesting to hear like such a different experience.
I wonder if, you know, I was homeschooled my whole life.
Oh, wow.
I went to a performing arts high school for 4 years, but it was not school. There were like six other kids in my class. Mm-hmm. And up until then, my only social interactions were my extracurriculars. So like I played soccer, mm-hmm. and I did gymnastics as a kid. And, you know, I was like swimming lessons, chess. Like my mom was really good at the extracurricular thing, mm-hmm. because of our being homeschooled. Mm-hmm. But my reality was just really different than most normal kids. It wasn't weird to me, but I realize now that the upbringing was definitely strange. Like I didn't have social pressure, peer pressure. There wasn't any example of, you know, oh, you know, you gotta kiss a boy. Let's like practice making out. Like I didn't have any of that. Like my best friends were my siblings. So I think because of my upbringing, it just never had to be a question.
Wow.
Really, really lucky for that.
Yeah, that's incredible. Shit. I'm happy for you. That's amazing. I mean, hopefully I feel like that's how, like in my head, how things will be in the future when there's like accepting, loving energy for everybody instead of this like, now you gotta pick one, like what are you, pick a box, this whole thing.
I hope so.
Nice, fluid free.
Yeah. I think it's really important that I don't try to, just because I identify as queer, mm-hmm. that I don't like take on the role of someone who's been oppressed by my sexuality, because mm-hmm. while I have certainly faced oppression, I'm a woman, mm-hmm. you know, so I have experienced what that is.
Yeah.
But in terms of my queer identity, I think it's really important for me to recognize the position of privilege that I've been in for my entire life, mm-hmm. which is that I've never had to answer to someone or been made to feel like I don't belong or like I'm wrong or that that it makes me less of a woman or of a person. Like that has not been my experience. And I think it's really important that whenever talking about queerness, I don't adopt oppression, because it's just not what my experience has been. And it doesn't have to be, and it shouldn't be, but it's important for me to recognize that the experience that I've had is very singular, and it has not been the experience of most queer people.
Yeah. I mean, it's so nice to hear that though, like to hear a story that is not sad or like hard or traumatic or I don't know, just like I feel like secondhand, like phantom piece.
That's awesome. I mean, I think that the hope in doing things like this, in talking about queerness, in representing queerness, that to normalize something means covering all bases, all experiences. And I want this to be the normal experience for everyone, that there doesn't have to be some traumatic coming out, that you don't have to live your life in fear, that you don't have to feel like people are not going to accept you, that it's just, you can just be, and it's all good.
Wow, that's fire. I really do hope that, like, I feel like so many people are so scared of accepting their identity or of coming out or sharing, and they're scared of, you know, the majority of traumatic things that could happen, but also there's like, things could just be chill. Things could just be normal. Like, I was watching, have you watched Schitt's Creek?
Oh my God. Yeah, of course. Okay. I'm all caught up.
Yeah, okay. I just started watching it like in quarantine. We just like binged through it. And I was like, what? They're not making a whole traumatic storyline. It's just no big deal. There's all these queer stories going on and it's just no big deal. Yeah. Like, beautiful.
It's such a good show too.
It's so fucking funny.
Oh my God. I like deep belly laugh at that show. I feel like you just reminded me of that. Because I binged it as soon as it was available. Like, I was on the train when it started. So I feel like it's time for me to revisit. Thanks for reminding me.
Like, I was so bummed when I hit the last episode. I was like, wait. And then 2 weeks went by and I was like, I need to start rewatching.
I can need a little more. They just like fly by. Oh, such a good show.
Truly. It's like the perfect little bit. My next question was something, but I feel like, you know, this kind of all falls into it already. But do you feel like hearing music with lyrics of same-sex love would help with finding yourself as a kid? But you already found yourself as a kid. So, you know.
I will say, like, representation is everything. It's so important. And if I had heard women singing about women when I was a kid, I think I would have been asking more questions, and I think I would have found myself, I think it would have opened me up to more that the community had to offer at a younger age, and feeling more understood and less like, I mean, there's so many times in my life that I thought this is going to pass or something. Like, it's not something to identify as, or like, maybe I'm just curious. I mean, especially around bisexuality, there's so much stigma that like, you just want attention, or you just want to be a part of the conversation, especially now where it's cool to be queer. It's like, oh, you just want to have a voice in the room. You just want to be included.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a kid, I think I tried to denounce the way that I felt for girls all the time because there wasn't representation. So it's not to say that my experience, that I felt that I needed to hide myself or change myself as a result of that. But I think I wouldn't have, I think it would have been really nice. And I love hearing it now because it just feels like validation. It feels like the person that you know that you are, there's a space for that.
Yeah.
So I think it's amazing to hear it now. And, I think we both recognize like how important it is to feel like you're being represented.
Yeah. Just to feel seen and understood is like, it's so weird too. Like, I'll have music on in the background and I'll just like, sometimes I'll just go through whatever Spotify or Apple and I'll have things on shuffle or whatever, just trying to find new stuff and have new songs pop up that I haven't listened to a million times. And I could literally be in the other room, not even paying attention. Stuff's on the in the background. And I'll like catch it so quick of a girl singing about another girl. And I'm like, wait, what? It's like, it's so clear and sets off such an alarm. And we don't even realize when we're not, like, obviously when we're actively listening to something, we're going to be, you know, paying more attention to lyrics, but Even when we're not, we're still absorbing so much information and we're still processing it subconsciously. And to just be like, wait a second, was that about me? Or like, was that, you know, just feeling that representation and that acknowledgement and that, just feeling like your identity is seen and represented in any way, even if it's just 1, 2.5 minute song, like
totally
such a different, and I like, I've been out for 15 years. Like, this is old fucking news for me. And I still get really like, wait, what? So I can only imagine for someone who doesn't know or like isn't okay with or hasn't explored or whatever to be like, wait, this, oh, that's okay. Like, oh, whoa, I felt that. And like, oh my God, putting all the pieces together, like, it's just, I think it's great.
So important. Not only that, but like for the people who aren't queer, who don't identify that way, or like are trying to come to terms with, you know, their kid being queer or their friend or the person they thought they were in love with or what, like whatever it is, to hear like, oh shit, like, oh, this is real. This is real. People really feel this. Like, I can have a much easier time like accepting this because it's being represented in our culture.
Totally. And it's like, I feel like we also have such, or for so long, so much queer art and not just art, but like, I guess identity has been represented in such a, like, people who don't know about the queer community, they either know like pride parades and people like running around naked with rainbows painted on them, or like, I don't know, some real flamboyant characters.
Totally.
And it's like, I remember when I came out to one of my uncles, he was like totally fine with it, thank God. I was really scared because he's like Muslim and Persian. I was like, but he's like, yeah, as long as you're not like running down the streets naked and doing a bunch of drugs, it's no big deal. And I'm like, oh my God, I forgot. That's what people think like gay culture is.
Totally.
And to have like things like this, or, you know, just music and just general art representing all of the real other nuances and identities and personalities in the culture and communities. So important, so chill. And then like, you know, a parent can be like, oh, you can be like, you can look like this and you can do these things and you can, you know, be out, but also be like this and that, and, you know, respectable. You don't have to be running around naked or whatever they think is going to happen.
Normalcy, just like, yeah, this is normal. I'm just a normal person and I have these normal feelings that you have as well. Yeah. And I just experience them this way. And
it's not a deal. Just like, don't make, you're the one making it weird. Don't make it weird.
Not making it weird.
Do you remember your first same-sex crush, if you had one as a kid? And like, did you know what it was? Or were you just like, my best friend's so pretty and cool? Or like TV character, like mine was Kimberly the Pink Ranger, the Pink Power Ranger.
Oh my God. So cute. I
didn't know what it meant, but I was like, oh my God, I love her.
Like, I can't stop thinking about her. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely my neighbor, Erica. Mm-hmm. She was my first crush. And yeah, I mean, she lived in this bright pink house, 3 houses down from the house I grew up in. I moved when I was 10. But before I moved, Erica was my best friend. I remember, you know what I actually remember now that I think is so interesting, because at the time I just like right over my head, but her mother was definitely gay.
Ooh.
Definitely gay. And she didn't have a partner at the time. She was single, but she would date women and have them over sometimes. And I would be there when she had her girlfriend over, and she adopted Erica and her sister Alex, and they were her adopted kids. And I met them when I was, you know, 4 years old. And by the time I was 8, I was over there like every day. And I loved Erica. I was like, I love you. But, you know, it was when you're 8 years old, it's like you haven't developed any sense of sexuality yet, I don't think. That's my take, was that
not like consciously.
not conscious. Yeah, I wasn't thinking like, am I into her? You know, I was fucking eight, yeah. But I just knew that like, I wanted to kiss her so bad. And I thought about her all the time and I missed her when I wasn't with her. So I knew like, I really, like I felt so strongly for her. And that was my first kiss. We pulled the baby pool over our heads and kissed under the baby pool.
Oh my God. I will
never forget moments with this person that, I mean, I don't remember shit else about being like an 8 year old, but I just have these vivid memories with this girl, Erica. Yeah. It was my first crush like ever. So I wonder if that had something to do with just the normalcy of it all, like throughout my life.
Wow. Shout out to Erica.
Miss you, girl.
You're not still in touch with her, are you? That would be amazing if you were.
No. As people do, like I moved when I was 10. We fell out of touch. I have no idea what she's doing now, but man, I hope you're good, Erica.
Well, she reaches out to you after this. That would be so cute. Oh my God.
It'd be so sick.
Favorite modern artist and favorite throwback artist? It doesn't have to be one. I know that's an impossible question, but just like a few that you're loving.
Okay. I mean, it changes all the time. I get really obsessive about music and artists, and I'll be like, you're it for me. And just dive into their catalog. And it's either a song that turned me on or a project or a video or something. And I'll just need to obsess over that. And that's like the only thing I'm going to listen to for months.
Yeah.
So my latest like new discovery that shouldn't be a new discovery is Mitski. Do you know Mitski? So good. So fucking good. She's amazing, makes amazing records. Really love her. Rosalia, I think, is probably the answer you're going to get like the most. Mm-hmm. She's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know of many artists that can, she's just, fuck, her voice is so emotive that like, I don't know what she's saying, but I know what she means kind of thing.
You know, one of my friends does her like visuals and stage production stuff, or like works on part of her team. And it tripped me the fuck out. She told me that her songs are all based off of this one like Spanish book. And I was like, what?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Brilliant. Like,
I heard that her record, I don't know if this is true, I have to fact check this, but I heard that her first album was her thesis project for college.
It's crazy. She's like next level.
That's for sure.
I have a fun question.
Ooh, okay.
And I really like listening to people's answers about this one. But if you could dream up your ideal creation zone, what would it look like? No limitations on anything. Physics, location, electricity. You could literally be like in the ocean, in space, like whatever.
Amazing question. Well, shit. I mean, I've always wondered like what a cloud feels like. Like, what's it like to be enveloped in something like that? But I think probably a truer answer to me as a person, like, I've been really obsessed with this record. It's a Brian Eno album, and it's called The Pearl.
Okay.
He's this, like, producer, engineer, multi-instrumentalist dude who's played in all these bands. But he makes these soundscape records using only the guitar and basically creating weird soundscape music, totally instrumental, really like, it's strange shit, but it's amazing for like meditating to, or just like falling asleep to, or like I particularly love it for like travel, flying, if you're like on a packed bus, you know, on tour or whatever it is. But this album called The Pearl is his interpretation of what it would feel like to live underwater.
Oh, wow.
And it's beautiful. It really feels like you're submerged in something. And it makes me feel, when I'm meditating to it or when I'm like falling asleep to it, I do this often, like I'm literally in the ocean underwater, And that environment is so peaceful and calming to me that I feel like the best places for me to create things are when I'm at my most at peace, my most comfortable. Especially like the writing process, the conception of something, the very beginning of something, the seed of an idea, those always come to me when I'm at my most still and most present with myself. So I feel like if I could make a record completely underwater, I think that would be kind of amazing. And yeah, this record, I would totally suggest it, especially for like right now.
I love that kind of stuff. So please.
I feel like you would really like it. He made another one called Apollo, which is like what he imagines it would sound like in space.
Oh, wow.
So sort of the two extremes, but they're brilliant records. That's a fun question.
I actually thought of that because whenever I've got my self-doubts and insecurities and whatever, and I noticed it was really helpful for me to do a certain type of visualization meditation before I started just working on music. And I would go through this whole process where I'm like meditating and I have a very specific meadow that I like go to in my head. And then I walk through this door and there's a bunch of TVs on the walls in this room and it's all me like talking shit to myself. And I go and I turn off each one, turn off all the fucking TVs. And then another door shows up and I go in there and it's this like big glass, like glowing gold bubble back in the meadow. And it's got all of my equipment and things. And I can see like the meadow and it's kind of like light rainy. And it's just like, it's such a feeling of warmth and safety and comfort and ease. And I was like, shit, I wonder like,
what other people have that, their version of that.
Yeah. Like what people's version of that would be. Cause I feel like we like normal studios to me are so uninspiring. Like it's dark. There's no windows. It's just like such a cave. And I mean, maybe to some people a cave is comforting and creative. Like that's great. But people, when they actually have a good think about that, it's very interesting where our heads go to feel safe in creation.
I love the, I love your turning off your own self shit talk. That seems like such a positive meditative process to just literally go around to each individual voice telling you that you're a piece of shit and just silencing it. But like, it sounds like what you're envisioning isn't aggressive. It's just a simple one touch system of like, just going to turn you off. Yeah. Just going to turn you off so that I can get into my space.
Yeah.
I think that visualization, I mean, we know how important it is. The visual elements of what we do, they're so, that shit becomes ingrained. And I think that we don't use visualization maybe enough or consider it enough because we're making music, which is something you don't experience that way.
Right.
But you really do, don't you?
Really? I mean, it's really powerful. I think everything kind of ties together. And even if we're just thinking about sounds, like sounds look and taste and feel different ways. So why wouldn't we explore that and use our other senses to manipulate and improve or whatever we need to or inspire? Like, why not use it?
Yeah, totally. Oh, I love that question. I've never been asked something like that before.
Oh, fine. Good. I was like, you always get asked the same fucking questions in little interviews. And I'm like, God, those are so boring. Just like,
you just read my last one.
Literally just like Google all the episodes.
I actually have such an aversion to giving the same answer to the same question. Yeah. Like I realize that it's not important. Like it's not a big deal to be like, oh, if you're going to ask me the same question, I have an answer for that. Yeah. But my personality is like, I need to come up with something different, even if it's just a different way of explaining it. Mm-hmm. Even if it just like presents some kind of challenge to me to like think outside of what my standard answer might be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think a lot of the reason I'm sure that artists do not do interviews is for fear of just the monotony of answering the same damn question, especially when it comes to, you know, the subject matter that you've built this thing around.
Mm-hmm.
Those questions are like incessant. They're like in basically every interview. I'm sure you've experienced this through your entire career.
Yeah.
But just this, yeah, especially when you're doing something for a queer specific publication.
Yeah.
It gets kind of echo chambery.
Yeah. And
you find that it's not really doing the thing that I think it hopes to do, which is to educate and normalize and create space. But it ends up just sort of like speaking to other queer people about what it is to be queer, people who already understand and know and get it. Like they don't need the education. They don't need that same answer to that same question.
Yeah. They just want to see like and hear people that they fuck with talk about
whatever.
Yeah.
And to just remember that like queer art is just art.
Yeah.
It just is. It's not a gay artist. It's just an artist.
Mm.
Bisexual recording art. Like that's not a, I just make music.
Yeah.
It's so nice when that's not at the forefront of the conversation, but that there is still spaces being created.
Yeah.
Like, I think that what you're doing is super important.
Thank you. I think it's just like having a balance, because it was interesting. My dad was wanting to show something to one of his colleagues or whatever, like, oh, look what my daughter does. And he like went to Google me. And I think he put in my, I forget if he put in my real name instead of like my artist name, and a lot of like personal stuff about my life came up, and almost all of it was like who I was dating or like, you know, lesbian this, lesbian that, gay this. And that's like, he was like, you know, people should be talking about your work. Like people should be talking about what you do. And it seems like all of it is about your personal life. And I was like, well, you looked at my personal name, so that's why that happened. But still, I was really aware of that because I'm like, okay, this is definitely part of my identity. I feel like it's important to give it a space and talk about it because I know it does help people to just have that representation, but also not have it be the thing, you know, like when every headline or conversation or introduction leads with like queer, blah, blah, like, no, it's just an artist that happens to be, you know, queer or a person of color or, you know, this or that, like whatever the hell you want it to be. It's just part of it.
Right. But I think conversations like this, and man, it's something that at the same time that you don't want to be a part of because you know that there's stigma and there's this obsession with knowing people's personal lives that you really have no business knowing or fixating on someone's personal life instead of their work, like all of these negative connotations of like existing as a public queer person or engaging with public queer platforms or just platforms in general,
mm-hmm.
doing interviews where you're being asked and not insisting that you don't answer the question, like engaging in these things, you know, that like at the same time that you're like, I don't fucking want to do this.
Yeah.
It is still so important because we're still so far from getting to the point where no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
And I think the only way to get to a point where no one gives a shit is to just beat that shit down, normalize it. Let's have as many queer stories as we do heteronormative stories. Let's just like make that happen. And we're just existing at a time when like the shifts are taking place and the tide is rising in the other direction and it's beautiful, mm-hmm. but you have to be active in that conversation in order for the tide to to finally make its way to the other side where this is normal. No one cares. It doesn't matter. we're queer culture, queer identity has been oppressed for so long. If you want to get to the other side of that, like, you got to talk about it. So, you know, double-edged sword, but I'm looking forward to a time when it's so irrelevant to people that it would be in bad taste to question who someone is into.
Yeah. Well, I won't take up any more of your time. What else do we need to do? Oh, we need to take a picture. Okay. 1, 2, 3. All right. Well, have a good night and say hi to all your kittens and also.
Same to you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning into She, Her, They. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube for video from this episode. Join us at She, Her, They on Instagram. And if you want to give me a lurk, you can find me across all social media at I Am Kittens. Yes, that's like baby cats with an S at the end. We'll catch you next time.